Hello, it's Norman Swan here with Radio National's Health Report. Welcome. In this program, to push or pull, a question many mothers face in the 21st century, or too posh to push. We have soaring rates of caesarean sections in this country and in other developed countries. And in fact, it's been going up for the last 30 years or so. Caesarean section, of course, is where a baby is removed surgically from the mother's abdomen during pregnancy. And what you're about to hear is the first of a two-part series on caesarean sections. Because in fact, there are some serious consequences that aren't being talked about. Next week, we'll explore the consequences of such a high caesarean section rate, and we'll look at that in depth. And you'll meet two women who developed life-threatening complications from their caesareans. But before we launch into that, we need to understand why one in three babies in Australia is delivered surgically. Here's Nikki Phillips with the story.
First, you have a cannula put into your hand. Then I went into theatre and I lay down on the bed and they gave me the epidural. I had a really great anaesthetist. It didn't hurt. It wasn't uncomfortable, though I think that is due to the skill of the anaesthetist. Then your legs seem to disappear. It's like they're in China. It's not numbness. It's a complete loss of their existence, which is a really strange feeling. They put a little curtain up. They say, okay, we're going to put a catheter in and we're just going to wash your tummy down. And about maybe 3 to 5 minutes later, they drop the curtain and your baby's there. And you know, the first thing I thought was, oh my goodness, I'm having a baby. You know, why didn't someone tell me? Like, it was an absolute shock.
They didn't have you where I come from.
Birth can be a risky business. It was only 200 years ago when a quarter of babies didn't survive it. Since those times, there have been improvements in medicine, surgery and sanitation, and these have decreased the infant death rate to 2.8%. Maternal mortality has decreased even further. I know what you're thinking. Why do we care if more women have caesareans? I mean, isn't it their right to choose? Well, having a caesarean is major abdominal surgery, and it comes with the risks of surgery. Women have to stay in hospital for longer, and they have a far greater recovery time. If we know this, why are one in three women having a C-section? But before we start, let's get it out there. This is a complicated issue, far more complicated than most of us realise. Women are not too posh to push, and it's not about obstetricians' tee-off times. There are two main groups of women having caesareans: those who choose it and those who consent to it on medical advice, either before or during labour. Let's start with those who request it for no medical reason. This is a pretty recent phenomenon that has increased dramatically over the last decade. It's also the rate that's caused the most controversy. And in total, it's about 18% of caesareans.
Women have good contraception, access to good contraception.
This is Caroline DaCosta. She's a professor of obstetrics in Cairns.
They can choose whether they want to have children at all, how many they want to have, when they want to have them, spacing and so on. And so control over what happens to you in a planned pregnancy, or even an unplanned but wanted pregnancy, is now regarded as almost as a woman's right. Part of that right is the ability to choose caesarean, or to agree to caesarean, or to suggest caesarean to your doctor if that's what you think should be happening to you.
And do you agree with that?
Well, yes, I certainly support choice in childbirth, which can be a whole range of things depending on the woman and depending on her medical conditions and how her pregnancy progresses and what her age is and her outlook on future reproduction. I think where caesarean is being done for less major reasons, and certainly when it's being done purely on maternal request, then a woman needs to be very, very certain about her request and well informed about the risks, and she needs to have good conversations with her doctors, her family, her friends, medical attendants and so on, about why she wants to do this and what the implications are.
Caroline DaCosta, an obstetrician from James Cook University. Overall, it's not well understood exactly why women choose caesarean section without a medical reason, but a study by the Cochrane Collaboration found women's birth choices were heavily influenced by three things: previous birth experience, their need for choice and control, and especially their fear of vaginal birth.
19th, 11am, Dr. Carlisle. If anybody asks, I'm breech.
I'm going to well your choice, Christine, but it is a shame you'll miss out on the wonder of natural birth.
It's not natural, it doesn't fit.
That was Christine Grimwald, a character on ABC TV comedy The Librarians. Christine's fear of birth is reality for many mothers. And who can blame them? I mean, everyone's got a friend of a friend whose mother gave birth vaginally, ripped her perineum, and needed a horrific amount of stitches. The fear of vaginal birth is exactly what midwife Jenny Fenwick, an academic from UTS in Sydney, found when she asked women why they chose a caesarean without a medical reason.
When we talked to those women, they're absolutely terrified of birth. So they talked about birth in very scary ways. The language they used, they were just terrified of what would happen to their body, and they were frightened of what would happen to the baby. There was no confidence in their body's ability to do this most amazing thing, which is have a baby. And so they talked about being really scared and frightened. And so they came to it with thinking that caesarean section was safer. And they believed it was safer for the baby. So they talked about, you know, the baby doesn't have to have forceps and it comes out with a perfect head. In actual fact, they often do use forceps during a caesarean section delivery. So there were some misconceptions about that. And certainly when they talked to their obstetricians, what happened was is they got positive reinforcement for the caesarean section. None of the women actually said that they'd been questioned or talked about their fear. That was just said, okay, if that's what you want, that's fine. There was no, how come you're feeling like that? Let's talk about it. Let's see if we can help, or what kinds of things can we work through about that decision. We also asked them about the risks and or benefits, you know, and what happened was there's no doubt they minimised the risk of caesarean section in terms of they articulated that it was surgery, but certainly that really believed it was safe and that was controllable and that lots of people around was going to make it all right. So that sense of, you know, someone else can make sure that it's okay.
Is having a caesarean safer?
No, absolutely not. You know, the evidence is quite clear that unless you really need one, it might be safer if you really need one and your baby, that's the best option for you. There's no doubt about that. We've got, you know, we live in a great country. We've got great, you know, theatres and antibiotics and, you know, we're healthy. And so it is a good option for those women who need it, but not at the rates that we're seeing now. And I think it's got some real long-term ramifications for women. We're not going to see that for another, you know, 30 years when this epidemic of caesarean sections and women start to come into their 50s and 60s. You know, we don't know the outcomes in terms of adhesions, all kinds of problems that might happen. And we do already know that there's long-term health ramifications for babies or for infants. So there's some research that suggests if you have a caesarean section, you're much more likely to have a child with type 1 diabetes. Your child's much more likely to have asthma. So there's some fundamental stuff happening around not having a normal birth, that is doing something to children. Now, that's not to blame women, but we really need to start understanding what's happening. In terms of the short term, no. Evidence quite clear. It's not safer for you or your baby if you're well and healthy and there's no reason for you to have a caesarean section.
What did you say her name was?
Grimwood?
Christine Grimwood.
Tell her I'm booked in for a caesarean.
She's booked in for a caesarean.
With Dr. Carlisle.
So if you could perhaps get him on the phone ASAP. Dr. Carlisle, what day are you booked in for?
Not for a month. I'm not due for another 4 weeks.
She's not due for another 4 weeks.
I can hear her. Dr. Carlisle's in Spain. Spain? What do you mean, Spain?
I mean the country next to France.
What's he doing in Spain, progressive franny? Get her to find another doctor to operate.
Oh. Did you hear her mention about someone else to
What's your medical reason for the caesarean? The baby breached.
No, the baby is not breached.
Yes, it is.
The baby's head is there. You're not breached.
I am, and if you don't believe me, you can ring the Kuyong Skin Institute.
Christine, I don't have another doctor who can perform a caesarean unless it's an emergency.
Look at me, I'm an emergency.
It's normal. Just relax. You'll be giving birth vaginally.
Oh, I don't think there's any need for that sort of language.
As Christine Grimwald from The Librarians found out the hard way, in Australia at least, caesareans for maternal request are performed mainly in private hospitals. Policies brought in by some state governments restrict obstetricians from performing caesars without a medical reason. In 2006, 41% of mothers giving birth in private hospitals had a caesarean, compared with only 27% in public hospitals.
If we assume that a woman is an intelligent, capable person prior to them getting pregnant, I don't see why that needs to change after they get pregnant. I think that, generally speaking, we still fail to respect women's views and women's decisions and women's autonomy, and I think that we specifically do that in pregnancy.
This is obstetrician Vijay Roche. He practices in both public and private hospitals. But he says if women are fully informed about the risks of a caesarean and a vaginal birth, then the decision should be theirs.
I don't think that it's up to an obstetrician to tell a woman what to do. I don't think it's up to a midwife or a policymaker to tell a woman what to do. I think that it's important that we respect that woman's wishes. Our responsibility is to educate her and to make sure that she's fully informed and that she makes a fully informed decision. And if we do that and her fully informed decision is to have a caesarean section, then she should be supported in that.
Women requesting caesareans accounts for about 3% of total births in Australia. Midwife Jenny Fenwick found that most first-time mums actually want a natural birth.
Most of the women talked in a very positive way about childbirth. They expected to have a normal delivery, a natural delivery, but they expected it to be a positive life-affirming event. So there was lots of positive comments. You know, they wanted to be well supported and cared for and, you know, in control of what was going on. They did, lots of women talked about doing it themselves and those kinds of things.
So if most women want a natural birth, what's going on with caesareans? Well, this is where it starts to get a little complicated, but stick with me because it's important. One of the biggest factors pushing up caesarean rates are those performed for medical reasons. Medical caesars can be divided into two types, elective and emergency.
The definition of an emergency caesarean section is quite simply one that's performed after the onset of labour. Elective caesarean section is done before the onset of labour. Now, having said that, there may well be some elective caesarean sections that are quite urgent because of concern about either fetal or maternal condition.
Obstetrician David Elwood, he's a professor of obstetrics and gynaecology at the Australian National University. Before we get too deep into why medical caesareans are on the rise, let me make it clear. Sometimes they're absolutely necessary. They save lives, mother and baby. Obstetrician Caroline DeCosta says about 50% of medical caesareans are life-saving, and no obstetrician or midwife or policymaker would argue about it.
The major medical reasons are, first of all, various kinds of bleeding hemorrhage, antepartum hemorrhage. We certainly offer them to all women who have breech presentation because we now have quite good studies to show that it is safer to deliver a breech presentation baby by caesarean. Preeclampsia, which is a common condition of raised blood pressure in pregnancy. Babies who are small for dates, who aren't growing well, possibly related to raised blood pressure. Diabetes in the mother, various other medical conditions in the mother are all major reasons, and sudden emergencies such as the umbilical cord prolapsing or serious fetal distress. In labour, they are done fairly commonly when labour is progressing very slowly and isn't responding to other measures, or if the baby becomes distressed during the labour.
So if about half of medical caesars are life-saving, what about the other half? Here's David Elwood.
There are also emergency caesarean sections performed in labour where there's no real concern for mother or baby. It's just that the labour isn't progressing normally.
And there's some women who I would say consent to a caesarean section.
Here's midwife Jenny Fenwick.
They didn't choose it, but perhaps they articulated a fear or they didn't articulate the fear. And as the pregnancy came to a close, the healthcare professional might say, they might articulate the fear, and then it was kind of, oh, well, look, you know, you'd be better off to have a caesarean section.
My name's Martine and I'm 45. I've got two children, one who's 7, a little girl, and a boy who's 5. Ultimately, they were both born by caesarean. The first time around, I was I sort of had my loins all girded, ready to have a vaginal delivery, although I was a little bit anxious about it. I'm not very tall and I'm not a big frame, so I was worried that I might have some trouble, but I sort of thought I had to give it a go. And we went to hospital in labour and the pain was pretty bad pretty early on, so I had an epidural, and as often happens, it all went pear-shaped from there and sort of I stop contracting, and if they put the syntocinon on, which is a sort of contracting medicine, her heart rate would drop. And so in the end, we sort of got to a bit of a stalemate and there was nowhere to go, so we ended up having a cesarean. Second time around, my little boy got a bit sick. He, about an hour after he was born, he started to have problems with his breathing and ended up being admitted to the intensive care unit and needed to be on a ventilator machine for about 12 days. And I suppose I always wonder whether, you know, the fact that we did a cesarean, you know, that the breathing problem he had was one of the problems that premature babies have, and I sort of wonder, you know, maybe he wasn't quite the dates that we thought he was. Maybe he was a bit more early than we thought, and perhaps, you know, having an elective cesarean may have been a part of him being so sick early on. And so I suppose that's something I'll always wonder about.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Surely having a cesarean on the advice of a trained professional is the best reason of all to have one. I mean, isn't the bottom line risk versus benefit? Well, of course it is, and that's part of the problem. When we talk about risk, many mothers, and some doctors even, believe the initial benefits of a cesarean don't outweigh the risks of the operation for mother or baby in the long run. We heard Jenny Fenwick talking about some of those risks before. But when mothers are presented with the information from their doctors, they too have to weigh up the risks and benefits. And studies show clearly, mothers will accept 10 times the risk to themselves before they'll accept any for their baby. And the biggest risk? Once you have one cesarean, you've got at least a 50% chance of having another one.
My name's Christina Garduno-Freeman. I'm 37. I'm having my second baby almost 5 years after my first. At the moment, I'm booked in for a cesarean on the 7th of November. I've got a reduced pelvic outlet, which I know is a contentious issue. I've done lots of reading around it. In addition, the baby can't go over term, and so the suggestion is that it would be quite likely to be a difficult birth, and with a previous cesarean, it increases the chances of rupture. And I guess under those circumstances, I'm trusting the opinion of my obstetrician.
As you heard Caroline DeCosta say before, failing to progress in labour and fetal distress are common reasons women are given medical cesareans. But these can be considered vague medical indications by some clinicians and many midwives, and they account for almost half of all medical cesareans.
Now, we know that we're not terribly good at picking out babies who are truly distressed. We have some means of screening for these babies, but we don't have a method of that's very, very accurate of testing during labour all the time a baby to make sure that baby has plenty of oxygen and it's safe to leave the baby progressing in labour. We know that some of these operations which are done for fetal distress result in the birth of a baby who probably wasn't distressed.
And could have been delivered vaginally, perhaps.
Could possibly have been delivered vaginally, yes. Mm. And that's something that a lot of work is being done on at the moment.
There's no doubt that obstetric intervention has greatly improved perinatal outcomes overall.
Obstetrician David Elwood.
There are many countries in the world where cesarean section rates are far too low to have the best outcomes for mothers and babies, and where there is a significant risk of both serious morbidity and mortality because of the lack of availability of interventions such as cesarean sections. Now, having said that, I also don't doubt that those interventions are being overused in some developed countries. There are demographic factors that are driving the cesarean section rates in Australia, and there are things like maternal age, maternal size, and fetal size.
You might remember an interview we did on the Health Report a few weeks back. Obstetrician Gordon Smith said cesarean rates were being heavily influenced by how old a mother was in her first pregnancy. Gordon says women who are having babies later in life have tired, clapped out uterine muscles. They're not being able to push out their babies. So unless women start having kids younger, cesarean rates will continue to rise. Back to David Elwood.
The fact that there are now many women with quite significant medical complications that are having pregnancies that perhaps in previous years they wouldn't have done so. There's also an increase in the number of multiple pregnancies of twins, for example, as the population ages. And all of these things drive the cesarean section rate. So I don't know what the ideal cesarean section rate should be. The World Health Organization made a statement about 20 years ago that it the optimal cesarean section rate maybe is about 10 to 15%. And I think it's very unlikely we're ever going to see rates as low as that again in developed countries. But I doubt whether one in three women need to have a cesarean section to achieve the optimal outcome, because one of the biggest drivers for the cesarean section rate overall is the fact that if you've had a first Caesar, you're much more likely to have a second or third Caesar.
No doubt you've seen one of those courtroom dramas on TV. You know, the one where the parents sue the doctor because the baby was injured during birth. It usually ends up with the doctor paying off the parents. But is this reality? I mean, David Elwood says, yes, it's true that obstetricians' medical indemnity insurance is much higher than it used to be. But has the fear of being sued spurred on cesarean rates?
I think there has been some impact from that. Not perhaps so much in increasing the number of elective cesarean sections, although but there may be times when, if the baby is particularly large, people may make that decision to do an elective cesarean section. But certainly the emergency cesarean section rates, I think, have been driven by concerns about making the wrong decision. I think the threshold for intervening has been lowered by the fact that doctors feel more vulnerable. It's probably a lot more than just the fear of being sued, because, I mean, that really is the tip of the iceberg, but I think it is the whole increase in accountability that's happened over the last 20 or 30 years, that people are much more likely to make early decisions, you know, practice a more defensive type of obstetrics.
Even though Australia doesn't have the highest cesarean section rates in the world, we're still higher than most OECD countries. Even the Royal Australian College of Obstetrics and Gynaecology is concerned about the rising rates. They say some serious research needs to be done to understand all the factors contributing to the rise. The reality is, once a woman has multiple caesareans, the serious health risks start to pile up. Here's Caroline DaCosta.
It is certainly known that if a woman has several caesareans, with each one she increases her chances of a placenta previa, which is the placenta being low down in the uterus and therefore needing a further Caesar in order to safely get the baby out. And occasionally that placenta previa burrows into the wall of the uterus to cause a condition called placenta accreta, which can be associated with a lot of bleeding at the time of birth. And that is something which is very risky.
And that's something that's been rising since the rising rates of caesarean sections.
It has. It's still a small proportion of women. And given that Australian women now are, I think, averaging 1.7 children, which means probably around about 2 for most women and 1 for some women, many women who have a caesarean on request only plan to have 1 or at the most 2 children, so that the risk of placenta previa and placenta accreta is small for them. But for women who have more Caesars, certainly the risk rises.
But some obstetricians don't believe there are too many medical caesareans.
I think that the caesarean section rate is now higher because our expectations are much higher and we don't accept harm.
Obstetrician Vijay Roche.
We only want women to be well, and we will absolutely only accept a baby being well after it is born. And the risks associated with vaginal delivery mean that there is potential for a baby to come to harm or a woman to come to harm during that process. And intervention and more intervention is required to reduce the risk of that harm. And one of those interventions is caesarean section.
But overall, there's a higher morbidity associated with caesareans, isn't there?
Well, that's questionable, and I don't think that that's proven. I think that all of the data that is quoted, I think, is old data. It doesn't take into account modern obstetrics. It doesn't take into account a large number of elective caesarean sections. That in itself is a very safe procedure. We now have processes for thromboprophylaxis, which reduce the risk of blood clots in legs and pulmonary embolus following delivery. And we use calf compressors in theatres. Our surgical techniques are better, our surgical materials are better. And so I think that there's been a significant improvement in the way that we look after women during their caesarean section, and so that morbidity is actually lower than it ever was. One of the observations that we make in the hospital that I work in is that if we looked at blood transfusion as a poor outcome that may occur after childbirth, that the incidence of blood transfusion following a vaginal delivery is higher in our hospital than it is after caesarean section.
What about obstetricians' lifestyles? That often comes into this debate as something that is driving caesarean section rates. How true is it?
I think that one has to assume the integrity of a profession, and if you don't assume the integrity of a profession, then the whole thing falls down. if you go by the New South Wales Department of Health guidelines and you book women for an elective caesarean section, it needs to be done at 39 weeks. And if you do that, 10% of those women will come into labour beforehand. And the two nights I spent out of bed last week had nothing to do with vaginal deliveries. They were both caesarean sections that the patient had come into labour early. And so I got out of bed in the middle of the night and I went and did a caesarean section at that time. So if I had been hoping for a better lifestyle, I didn't achieve it last week. The great irony is that we do not consent women to vaginal delivery. Vaginal delivery is the default, that's the natural way to deliver. But we know that nature is a very poor midwife. And so therefore the attrition rate, the babies that we lose and the mothers that we lose, is very high if we just leave it up to nature. And yet, when someone chooses to go down the natural pathway to have a vaginal delivery, we don't explain that there might be a risk of damage to their bowel or damage to their bladder, or, as I said before, heavy enough bleeding to require a blood transfusion. We don't talk about perineal damage that might cause sexual dysfunction for the rest of their life. We don't talk about potential incontinence. We don't talk about the potential for a traumatic birth experience. We may obliquely refer to the risk of an instrumental delivery or an episiotomy, but most women, in my experience, electing to have a vaginal delivery or planning to have a vaginal delivery, assume that it will all be without complication.
Rising rates of caesarean section isn't just a story about choice versus medicine. It's not just about what mothers want or what doctors want. Midwife Jenny Fenwick.
What we're seeing is a lack of cultural knowledge around birth, so that women don't come to birth with a good understanding of what it is or feeling comfortable. We're in this society that kind of, that doesn't talk about it, that is kind of hidden away a little bit. Where, you know, if we've got a whole lot of women now who are having caesarean sections, then that has implications for their daughters. And we've already seen some women thinking, oh, well, my mum had it. And we're seeing it in certain kind of areas. So I think that we potentially it does. We need to, that's why it's so important for us to get the message out there and to keep birth normal, because it's got ramifications for the next generations of women.
If the caesarean section rate keeps rising, then we may well reach a tipping point where, you know, once we reach 40-45%, we're almost halfway there, and we may rapidly accelerate to the point, as has happened in some countries in the world, where the caesarean section rates can be 70 or 80%. Now, if that were to happen, then, you know, we really are becoming a species that no longer gives birth vaginally the way that we were designed to give birth. And I would make the point that probably once we get to that position, there's no turning back. You know, all of the skills that have been developed over the years to make childbirth safe, we would not be able to turn the clocks back and go back to a situation where vaginal birth was the norm. I mean, birth would be something that was surgically managed.
We've now come to a turning point in our society. And if you think I'm being dramatic, take a look at private hospitals in Brazil. 80% of their babies are born via caesarean. It could happen to us. And is this what we want?
And Nikki Phillips is making this two-part series on caesarean section for the Health Report. Next week, in our second program, we'll take a look at some of the consequences of the operation, and you'll meet two mothers who developed serious complications from their caesars. I'm Norman Swan, and I'll see you then.
Is tinkering men in sheds with three-wheeled washing machines? Or is it open-source software? Can millions of online tinkerers save us from climate change? Is the digital age one big tinker? If you're a bottom-up or non-linear thinker and not a store-bought person, you most probably tinker. To change, to play, to improve. Future Tense wants your tales of tinkering. Details are at abc.net.au/rn/futuretense.